It's local news and features. We're in batch number 2 of update for May the 30th, 2025. So batch 2 stories for you now, and Uta's going to give you her headlines first.
Okay, well, here we go then. Royal Stoke record as state-of-the-art robotic surgery cuts waiting lists. That sounds promising. And then we have Staffordshire's fire chief offers support.
And my headlines coming up after Uta. Stoke-on-Trent Street has been turned into bedsit land, and Newcastle College set to swallow up rival amid plea for courses to be retained. So over to Uta, who's going to do the first story for us in batch number 2.
Right, talking about the state-of-the-art robotic surgery cuts waiting list. A Royal Stoke surgical team has carried out a record 6 robotic gallbladder removals in one day. The team, led by Richard Lang, consultant surgeon specialising in pancreatic cancer and complex gallbladder conditions, was able to complete the day's records caseload as part of a high-intensity theatre. That was his schedule to help reduce surgical waiting lists at the hospital. The procedures, known as cholecystectomy, were made possible thanks to state-of-the-art robotic-assisted surgery. As well as speeding up the time required to carry out an operation, the intuitive Da Vinci surgical system reduces post-operative complications and reduces recovery time. Mr. Lang said UHNM's upper gastrointestinal surgery team has been utilizing the Da Vinci robotic system since August 2024. We are normally able to perform 4 or 5 of these procedures on a normal standard operating list. However, we were able to complete the 6 procedures as part of a HIT list to help reduce surgical waiting lists at UHNM. This increased number of cases were facilitated by utilizing the state-of-the-art technology. Well, the intuitive Da Vinci surgical system improves upon traditional keyhole, a laparoscopic surgery by giving a surgeon a much clearer, magnified 3D view of the surgical field, as well as enabling enhanced precision and dexterity. The system also has built-in technology that can be utilized during the case, which an increased safety such as fluorescence imaging and intraoperative ultrasound. So I had a mouthful of really difficult words, but I think I went through quite all right. Now, it continues with the success of the HIT list, with 5 out of 6 patients discharged the same day, highlights the efficiency and benefits of robotic assistant surgery at UHNM. This level of productivity is not normally seen with conventional laparoscopic techniques. This list includes a complex case which took over 2 hours, which highlights what we were able to achieve. In one particularly complex case, I was able to utilize the robotic system's video hub to replay parts of the case to one of my pancreatic surgery consultant colleagues. This, as well as other built-in technology, provided clarity and enabled me to proceed with the case to completion. This undoubtedly helped avoid an extended hospital stay and possibly another operation further down the line. The patient stayed overnight rather than several days, thanks to the benefits that the robotic platform provides. Most importantly, this achievement was only possible thanks to the superb teamwork of everyone involved, including anesthetics, nursing and theatre staff, the recovery team and the surgical management and strategy team, who have been incredibly supportive. It truly demonstrated that we can accomplish when cutting-edge technology meets a highly skilled and collaborative team. That sounds positive, doesn't it?
It really does. So, my first story for you now in batch number 2 is Stoke-on-Trent Street has been turned into what's been called bedsit land. Neighbours have lost their fight to try and stop a Stoke-on-Trent family home from being turned into an 8-bed house of multiple occupancy, HMO. The proposal for the semi-detached property, which includes a loft conversion and rear-facing dormer, will increase existing parking issues on Claridge Road in Harts Hill, according to some residents. Objectors also said that the number of HMOs in the street has reached saturation point and the area has been turned into bedsit land. A change of use planning application for the property was submitted by town planning experts on behalf of the applicant Robert Stone. The design and access statement stated that the application site relates to a two-storey semi-detached family home that is located on the north side of Claridge Road and within an area of comparable homes. The property has been extended to the rear many years ago and the existing building is not listed, not within a conservation area and not within an established flood risk zone either. As such, there are no overriding environmental constraints preventing the development as proposed within this application. Resident Edward Bellingham was one of the opposed to the application, stating that "I feel that if this extension goes ahead, it will set a precedent for any future properties which come up for sale. What was once a friendly and quiet neighbourhood is slowly turning into bedsit land with a zero community that no one has bothered about and will have a detrimental effect on this area." Neighbour Anne Ryle said, "To my knowledge, there are 4 small HMOs in the part of Claridge Road between Victoria Street and Lansdowne Road alone. This means that there are potentially 80 more residents in HMOs there. These numbers alone must mean that Claridge Road have reached saturation point when it comes to providing, in most cases, temporary homes for people in HMOs." Philip Riles added that car parking is already very limited across Claridge Road and surrounding streets, particularly in the evenings. There are often evenings when there are no available spaces at all. Councillor Sean Pender registered that strong opposition to the application, stating, "As the ward councillor, I'd like to register my strong objection to this application. In particular, if granted, then this would increase parking and traffic issues in the street and cause problems for existing residents." In its representation, Staffordshire Police has also raised concerns over potential parking issues, and the force said, while there are public transport routes nearby and access to a range of facilities in walking distance, the limited parking provision in a street with no on-off parking could be perceived to be potentially problematic for the provision of an 8-bed HMO. So over to Uta, who's going to do her next story for us in batch number 2.
Thank you, Timbo. It's about the Staffordshire's fire chief who offers support following a tragic death. Staffordshire's chief fire officer has been leading work to put more wellbeing support in place for senior service leaders following the death of a colleague in the West Midlands. Former West Midlands Fire Service chief fire officer Wayne Brown was just 54 when he was found dead at his home last year. An inquest into his death opened at Birmingham Coroner's Court on Monday, that's now May the 19th. On Tuesday, May the 20th, a Staffordshire Fire and Rescue Service public performance meeting heard that some senior leaders across the service A Staffordshire Fire and Rescue Service public performance meeting heard that some senior leaders across the service nationally had struggled to obtain support when needed, but action was now being taken to improve access. Staffordshire Police, Fire and Crime Commissioner Ben Adams, addressing Staffordshire's Chief Fire Officer Rob Barber, said, "I was reading the coroner's inquiry into the death of Chief Fire Officer Wayne Brown in the West Midlands, and they were talking about quite a healthy provision of health and well-being support for the majority of staff in the fire and rescue services. But they did recognise the difficulty in making those services available to senior officers as well. I know you've been involved with the fire chiefs in a piece of work on this. Are we closer to officers in the most senior roles being able to reach for the help they might need as well? Mr. Barber gave his condolences to the family, friends and loved ones of Mr. Brown, who he described as a dear friend and colleague. He added, "That inquest is running this week, and some of the comments made by the coroner really struck a chord. There appears to be a lack of support for senior leaders. We spend a lot of time making sure everybody in our organization has the appropriate well-being support, whether that's from a physical or mental health perspective, and our jobs are significant roles we hold. There has been an identification throughout the sector that many senior leaders have been struggling in terms of being able to access support when required. The National Fire Chiefs Council put together a group, and I have chaired that group. We have developed a number of support documents that are just going through the final process of being badged by the NFCC, and that provides an opportunity for senior leaders to understand how to access support, when to get that professional support and help, and it has to be in that confidential environment. Also, the Firefighters Charity are really supporting that work well with us. It's a clear gap. Some fire and rescue services hadn't got policies in place to support the most senior of leaders. Hopefully, some positive can come out of a tragedy such as Wayne's passing. That will be a good thing for the sector." Speaking after the meeting, Mr. Adams said, "I'm really supportive of the National Fire Chiefs Council's focus on the issue of the mental health and well-being of the sector's senior leaders. We need to attract and retain the most talented leadership in the fire and rescue sector. But unfortunately, leaders quite often find themselves subjected to inexcusable and unwarranted personal abuse. During these times, the support of their peers or a professional network is vital. A key part of the wider cultural work underway within the Fire and Rescue Service is to make this kind of personal attack less prevalent in the future and to reinforce the message that the well-being of every employee within the service is imperative." At the start of Tuesday's meeting, the fire chief officer also offered his condolences to the families, friends and colleagues of three people who died in a blaze at an Oxfordshire business park last week. Firefighters Martin Sadler and Jenny Logan lost their lives alongside father of two, Dave Chester. Mr. Barber said, "Two further firefighters have sustained significant injuries and they remain in hospital at this point. Our thoughts remain with those and their families as well. Thoughts and prayers of everyone at Staffordshire Fire and Rescue Service are with our colleagues in Oxfordshire, and I have offered any support we can send to their chief fire officer."
Many thanks. So, my final story now in batch number two is Newcastle College is set to swallow a rival amid plea for courses to be retained. Councillors say that it is vital that courses are retained once a town's college moves to a different provider. Leek College is set to be transferred from the University of Derby to Newcastle and Stafford College Group, the NSCG, over the summer in order to align with the government's place-based education and skills policy. Elected members at Staffordshire Moorlands District Council broadly welcome the plans, noting the excellent track record of the NSCG, but they have called for assurances that courses will not be reduced at Leek College, particularly in relation to the historic and valued Leek School of Art. Councillors also raised concerns over the current lack of public transport between Staffordshire Moorlands and Newcastle-under-Lyme. They passed a full council motion calling on the council's leaders to discuss these issues with the NSCG. Councillor Gareth Taylor, who proposed the motion, said, "On the face of it, you might think this is to be enormously welcomed in the long term. Education and skills are going to see powers and resources devolved down into the regions, so the opportunity to have Leek College, our further education college, to be realigned with a Staffordshire organisation is probably going to be a good thing. But we need to recognise how important a local FE college is, making sure that a local area has the education and skill it needs to generate a positive effect on the area. We need to therefore make sure that when it transfers ownership, it continues to offer the courses that both learners and employers actually need. There's a danger that it becomes an offshoot and loses courses. Councillor Nigel Yates said that Leek College is a college for the whole of the Moorlands, not just where this happens to be on a bus route. We have concerns about connectivity in the Moorlands. If courses are delivered on split sites, then we need that three-way connectivity. Councillor Mark Johnson suggested that there would be little danger of Moorland students seeing their courses transferred to Newcastle Underline. He said at the moment Newcastle College has unmet demand for places, as I believe the college will not be minded to use the Moorlands as a feedstock for their campus there. And their record and investment in their Stafford campus also suggests that they're committed to a genuine spread of excellence across their campuses. Councillor leader Mike Leadhill told the meeting that a meeting with the NSCG had already been arranged and he would seek assurances on all the points raised. Most of the people who responded to a consultation on the proposals to transfer Leek College back actually backed the move, and NSCG said that it's committed to maintaining a further education presence in Leek with long-term plans for an enhanced curriculum. All courses will run as advertised in 2025-2026, with plans to expand the offer from September 2026 onwards. NSCG says there are no plans to transfer courses from Leek to Newcastle or offer funded transport between the campuses. So keep listening. We've got more stories coming up for you in batch number 3. Sorry, I'm one.